Welcome to Shift, a college admissions ACT and SAT podcast for a changing world. I'm Tyler, the founder of Achievable, and we have an affordable ACT course that gives you everything you need to ace your ACT test. A full textbook, tons of ACT questions backed by our memory-enhancing algorithm, videos on key topics, a built-in study planner, and full-length practice exams. You can get a free trial by going to achievable.me, and if you like it, the code podcast gets you 10% off at checkout. Now, let's get started. Today, we've got Shane Bybee from Bybee College Prep with us today. And Shane, I'd love it if you could just give a little bit about your background for those of us that haven't heard from you before.
Okay, Tyler. Thanks for having me on today. I run a test prep, college prep company in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, where we do almost entirely in-person tutorials for the SAT and ACT. We also help students with their college applications and college admissions journey. We worked with about 400 students or so last year, about the same this year. And we have two locations here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And because of that, I spend a lot of time looking at what's going on in college admissions and what's happening in the college admissions world that affects students in their application process.
Yeah, and this is a big one, probably one of the biggest things that happened in the college admissions world in a very long time that we're going to talk about today, which is the SCOTUS affirmative action decision. And it's pretty important. I mean, do you want to maybe just give sort of a brief summary of it from your point of view?
Yeah. So the Harvard and the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, were sued by the Students for Fair Application for Fair Admissions SFFA, and in the lawsuit, the case was heard, I think, in October, and the decision was made, was released in June 30th, I believe, and it said that essentially that colleges are no longer allowed to use race as a part of their admissions decision. There's been some exact wording of it. It does say Chief Justice Roberts did say, I mean, I can read the two huge pertinent passages of paragraphs that he, or sentences that he wrote. Because the programs lack sufficiently focused measurable objectives, they unavoidably employ race in a negative manner and involve racial stereotyping and lack meaningful endpoints, those admissions programs cannot be reconciled with the guarantees of the Equal Protection Clause. But, and here's the interesting thing that's happened, they also said nothing prohibits universities from considering an applicant's discussion of how race affected the applicant's life, so long as that discussion is concretely tied to a quality of character or unique ability that the particular applicant can contribute to the university. So that's what's been the interesting thing. And then they had other information or other statements inside of the decision warning universities about seeing this as some kind of loophole. But yeah, that was the big one. And we still don't know effectively. Students still report what, for demographic reasons, for the government to be able to track what's happening, students will still report their ethnicity if they wish to on their application. But the university is, because I think it's asked for in Common App still, the university in their application process is prohibited from using that designation as a factor in the application.
Information? I thought that they not going to get that checkbox anymore, and that was how it was going to be sort of blind. But are they still getting the info? They're just told that they can't consider it?
No, that's what I'm saying. They won't get that information. Whatever the process is, I think the information for government processes, the information still has to be tracked, right? Because when you turn in your iPads data, I guess that's where it's going to be different. When you turn in your iPads data to the government, let me just – take one quick breath and say what we're experiencing right now is exactly what's happening across the entire system. Nobody really knows right now.
Right.
Exactly what it's going to look like, right? Yes, they have to get information on race I'm mixing ethnicity and race there, but they have to get demographic information on race for things like their IPIDS data. They're still going to have to report to the government the percentage of their students who were admitted and how the racial breakdown, what the racial breakdowns were of that group. But whatever the application process itself is, it is no longer going to have the definition of what of your race is not going to be submitted to the university effectively. I'm looking in a Common App account right now to see, there it is. So now there's things about that that are just kind of ridiculous, right? If your last name is Lopez, it's kind of a giveaway. the difficult part, and this confirmation makes people so uncomfortable. The difficult part is what if you are Hispanic? Your mother was Hispanic, but your father was not. So you do qualify for, you do identify with that racial group. But your last name is Bybee because, your dad, I'm about as white as they come. And so, if that's the case, what's going to be what is going to happen? So it's what's been interesting to see is how that is going to be communicated to the universities. Because one of the most interesting aspects was Sarah Lawrence. John Roberts' decision. So right now, right this second, on Sarah Lawrence's admissions application, it says, I'm quoting from it, Chief Justice John Roberts, the author, notes nothing prohibits universities from considering an applicant's discussion of how race affected the applicant's life. Skipping on, it says, drawing upon examples from your life, a quality of your character, and or a unique ability you possess, describe how you believe your goals for a college education might be impacted, influenced, or affected by the court's decision. So some universities have just decided to go right back and said, you said we could ask it this way. We're quoting you. We're quoting your decision in our application process. So that's been one. I read University of Virginia. I've been trying to find it. They don't have it on their actual website. A student shared it with me. I've been trying to find it on the actual website. But they have one that does something very similar to that. Here we go. Let me see here. They have a short prompt that says for all of their applicants, they say, what about your individual background, perspective, or experience will serve as a source of strength for you and those around you at UVA? Mm-hmm. That's probably not quite as direct, but that sure seems to be really well related to what the Supreme Court said. So a lot of the universities have openly, overtly invited students to write about their own experiences that are based on their racial experiences. So,
I think it's important that like these experiences are considered. I mean, that's the thing that I find interesting about all of this is like, the Supreme Court basically was like, sure, you can consider their experiences, but like not their race. It was, I always found that to be I feel like the exception, honestly, by saying the exception when I say that, meaning like you can put it in the essay and then still considered, which I guess they can't really prevent that. But on the other hand, it kind of makes the whole thing silly. Like now it's just a game of like, how do I figure out how to put it into my essay if that's something that I want to talk about, right?
Well, we can make it ludicrous in a minute. I do think one of the things that's uncomfortable, or I guess not uncomfortable, part of what they said in the decision was the problem with doing it the way the universities were doing it is they were saying, from the university's perspective, every Hispanic applicant had these experiences. Every black applicant had these experiences. So they were taking what might be stereotypical experiences and applying it to every applicant, whether or not that had been the applicant's experience or not. And there's a guy named Freddie DeBoer. About 2 years ago, Freddie had a great article. Why do you think Harvard gives a fuck about your experiences? And I'm misquoting the title of it a little bit, but I'm not misquoting the fuck in that title. I think it may have been at Harvard doesn't give a fuck about you or something like that. And Freddie's comment was, he'd be a great guest for you, by the way. Freddie's comment was that it's not like Harvard, when Harvard came out and said that they were going to get rid of test scores, they were going to stop requiring test scores. Harvard did not send an army of admissions officers into Harlem to find that diamond in the rough and find that kid that had just been overlooked and was being held back because of test scores. Mm-hmm. Harvard instead used that as an opportunity to find the American-born children of someone who might own a diamond mine in Kenya, and then accept that student because that family is going to make bigger contributions to Harvard. And right. That's not hypothetical. That's what you can see it in Harvard's data, that the Black and Hispanic students they tend to accept tend to be, I mean, this is the nature of the top, the Ivy League admissions, that the students they are accepting tend to come from a higher, come from the 1%. It's like 60% of their admissions is out of the 1% of incomes in the country. And
right,
so
and it makes you wonder what
happening.
They're really going for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's I'm reading through a study from this summer, and really the study comes out and says if your Ivy Plus schools really want to increase diversity and increase opportunity, they will use test scores in the application process. And the study was researchers at Harvard. I'm only a few pages into it so far, so I'm still getting through all of the data. But, you know, they cite the fact that a legacy applicant to an Ivy Plus school is 5 times more likely to be admitted than the average applicant. And so you have, you know, these elements that yes, it's great that Harvard, you know, was able to use race in the past and have a diverse class. But it wasn't an economically diverse class. It was just a racially diverse class. And then you can argue whether or not it was even all that racially diverse.
Well, it's like if it's, you know, racially diverse, but everybody owns a diamond mine, how diverse is it?
yes.
It's kind of funny, right? Because at the end of the day, I mean, we had another episode that you should also go listen to about hooked versus unhooked students. The real thing that is, I guess, troublesome if you're really looking for a meritocratic and equal playing field in college admissions is legacy admissions, right? Or what are called uh-huh. institutional needs, right? Where there are things that, you know, whether it's, you know, a sports athlete or something like that, that the school feels yeah. like they need. And so, I mean, I think like, you know, recruiting athletes, maybe that's making more sense, right? But legacy, I think a lot of times is less like, you know, people talk about, oh, it's not fair. And, you know, that was sort of why some people were against affirmative actions. They felt like it wasn't fair. Well, I mean, legacy admissions is far less fair, right? Like, yeah, well, even if you think that affirmative action is unfair, which, you know, there's a whole, that's an entire debate, which we're not going to have here. But I think like there's a lot of other things going on in the college admissions world that are also kind of creating the same inequalities in admissions rates and opportunity.
And the idea of fairness or what is, I don't know. And I'm not trying to, you know, like I said, as you know, probably the largest symbol of the white male patriarchy that any listener could ever have, you know, speaking on behalf of the white male patriarchy, let me go ahead and say, no, I'm just,
I don't know if you want to become the representative for that, but go for it.
Oh, there's plenty of people who are already lumping me into that category as they're listening. But, you know, what is fairness in this? And here's, because I said earlier, we could make this ludicrous. But the problem with the application process is there's nothing prohibiting a student from talking about their racial experiences now and just completely making it all up. And there's nothing to confirm it. There's nothing to, and because it sounds like what a student might go through or whatever, they could, there's a lot. And the cynic in me says that, you know, there could be a huge advantage to identifying one way in your application, but showing up to the college, however you show up. And it's, there are going to be people who do that. Let's, you know, one of the things I'll say a lot of times, if Harvard came out and talked about how impressed they were with the number of students who were teaching goats to read in Guatemala, every student who was applying to Harvard next year, half of them would be booking flights to Central America, and the other half would be hiring media teams to make it look like they had. That's what would go on. Whatever the admissions, because college is looked at as a trophy now, your acceptance to a certain place, and God bless the 18-year-old. If you're listening to this and you're the parent of a 17 or an 18-year-old that's going through this ridiculous process we've created for college admissions now, every adult they encounter in their life, within 90 seconds of talking to them, is going to ask them this time of year, especially the beginning of their senior year, right? How's the college application process going? And the adult's doing it out of a place of compassion. Hey, I know the kid's going to be doing this. Let's find out. But that kid is hearing that from everyone. And what they want to be able to say is, well, you know, I'm applying to Vanderbilt. I'm thinking Vanderbilt, or if I don't get Vanderbilt, then Georgetown might be okay, because that sounds good. And because they know those two schools exist. The reality is that student saying that would probably do a ton better at a TCU, a ton better at an SMU. But our ridiculous process makes it sound like you have to have a school that's going to make the person you're talking to really feel impressed by what you're saying to them. And it's not that way. I talk about my clients sometimes, but I had to talk to a client 3 or 4 months ago and explain. She was very much looking at college was going to be where she got into college was going to be her reward for all of her hard work. Mm-hmm. And we call here in the South a come to Jesus moment, where I explained to her the most common reward for hard work is more hard work. That where you go to college, that's not the prize. That's just the waypoint onto bigger things in your life. And really, it's more important that we find the right waypoint, the right milestone for you. Yeah, it's a milestone, but finding the right one, it's not a trophy. It's not the accomplishment is not getting into the college and really reframing what the students are looking at in that way. So back to the admissions problem then. I think because a lot of students look at it as it is a trophy, it is a reward for my hard work, they are going to manipulate the process a little bit. It's the process is open for manipulation. 10 years ago, I had, it's more than that, 15 years ago probably, the counselor came and talked, as an English teacher in a former life, and the counselor came and talked to my class, and this one student raised his hand, and he said, does anybody ever really check all of those things that we put on our college applications, like the number of community service hours I did? And I really got onto him for that because, in my opinion, a student really only asks that question is if they're looking for a loophole where they can put anything on there. But the reality is no one's checking that. There's no verification process for most of what you put on there. So I've made jokes. It's not going to be in favor, but you know, Steve Martin had that movie, The Jerk, way back, I want to say it was in the 80s. And he opens the movie talking about how he was born a poor black child. If you know who Steve Martin is, he was not born a poor black child. Right. So I think there's going to be lots of stories that students tell. How many clients do I work with who they'll come to me and be like, no tragedy has happened to me in my life, and my essay has to talk about some tragedy. And we are like, no, your essay doesn't have to talk about that.
Right. There's so much hand-wringing around, like, what do I do to get into the school? And it's not about, you know, how do I make this school like me for who I am, or, you know, how do I tell my story? It's like, how do I How do I, you know, play the game or do the popular thing, right? Like, there's another video that, not video, excuse me, podcast that I did with somebody about TikTok, college admissions essay trends, where he was like, don't do these. There are so many stories that you have that you can't even necessarily, like, you're not thinking about it the right way if you think that you don't have some story that's a good admissions essay. And you don't need to like follow some trend just because one girl got into Harvard one time. That was her story, right? And she's getting some TikTok clout off of it because at the end of the day, you know, people want TikTok clout, but that doesn't mean it's a good idea for you.
Yeah. Let's at the 5 or 6 years ago, there was the essay, and all the people jumped on it about read the essay that got her into Harvard. And then if you looked at that student's, it was the Costco essay where she talked about Costco as a metaphor for her life. Well, if you looked at her profile, that's not what got her into. So I got her into Stanford, excuse me, by the way. Let me clarify which of the unattainable schools she got into. But she got into Stanford, and it was, it's she didn't get to Stanford because of the essay she wrote. She got into Stanford because she was top of her class, because she had amazing. She was like the student council president, student body president. She had all these accolades. She was an absolutely outstanding student. If you don't have those and you write the same essay, you're not getting into Stanford.
Right. You have the exact same essay, 1200 SAT score. It's not gonna help.
It's not gonna. Yeah, it's never gonna happen. And that really, I try to talk to students about, look. Approach this process like you would a job interview. I mean, almost like you would dating in some regards. It is where you're going to hopefully live for 4 years and only 4 years. And so keep that in mind. And as you go through it, keep in mind the process needs to be mutual. You need to like them as much as they like you for that 4 years to be beneficial to you. And, if you like them a lot more than they like you, it's not going to be as good. And so they could approach it that way. I work so much authenticity. I just be authentic in who you are in the process, and everything works out better for the end of it than if you're having to constantly pretend you're something or be something you're not. Don't worry about that stuff. But back to this whole the Supreme Court stuff, the fact is we do not know right now. And we really won't know until we get through definitely this application process. So we're 9 months away from being able to see how it's affected this application process. And then universities figuring out what worked and what didn't work. And then guys like me reverse engineering it and figuring out how to tell our clients what worked and what didn't work.
Right. I mean, yeah, it is definitely uncharted territory at this point, I feel like. Do you have any advice for parents that are navigating this process either this year or in the future? You know, whether they are parents of children that have this kind of background or that the SCOTUS decision affected or not.
Advice for parents that are trying to navigate this in the future, they, don't let this be the factor. You don't want to get into the school. You didn't want your student to get into the school because they were Hispanic. You didn't want your student to get into the school because they were black. You wanted your student to get into the school because they could thrive at that school. That hasn't changed. And so, and don't worry about that portion of it, but find the university that does meet academically. I talked on the previous podcast that we did about that top half strategy. Find a school where academically your student is in the top half of the students that are going to that school so that they will be competitive academically and they're going to have more opportunities that way. That's the critical thing for me. And there's going to be plenty of criticism of that because you just don't know. But that's really is for the outcomes down the road. Our clients who we work with, who go to extremely selective universities, that's been the big thing for them is they found a university where they felt like a part of things. It was their community. One of my students 1 year got into SMU. She had all of her college essays had been about how She wanted to get out of the bubble. The community where we're based there in the Dallas area has a solid bubble around it. It's been in the national news quite a few times, South Lake, because of the bubble. And her essays are all about how she wanted to get out of the bubble. She couldn't wait to get out of the bubble. And then she called me up in April and said, "Hey, I'm going to go to SMU." And I was like, "Gabby, that's a thicker bubble. Like, what happened?" And she's like, "Look, I know it is, but inside of SMU, she found her tribe. She found the people that fought like her, that talked like her, and she got her degree in 4 years at SMU, loved it, and then headed off for an MFA out in LA, and is now making all kinds of avant-garde films out in LA because that was the right place for her." It's been that's my thing about the whole process is finding. It's the hard part of the process, but find the place that's the right place for your student, not just trying to win some kind of race.
Yeah, I mean, the college admissions process at the end of the day is supposed to be about you finding the right college for you, right? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily mean the college that is most impressive to your friends or your parents' friends. Or whatever it is, like it could mean many different things. And I think that that's like the key thing to continue to keep in your mind as you're navigating this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great.
That would be my advice.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This has been Shift, a college admissions podcast for a changing world, hosted by Tyler from Achievable with Shane Bybee from Bybee College Prep. You can get a free trial of Achievable's ACT course by going to achievable.me and use the code podcast to get 10% off at checkout.